Something strange is happening to Iowa's oak trees. Every year, more Iowans report that their oak trees have leaves that look like they've been ripped or torn. The condition is called oak tatters. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Oak tatters has been observed since the 1980s and documented since 1995, but we still don't know exactly why it happens. This hour, we'll find out more about tatters and dig into what may be behind this condition. Then later on, we'll meet the New York Metropolitan Opera's next big star, soprano Jessica Faisal. She grew up in Kelowna and went to the University of Iowa. I'll talk with her. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll meet an Iowa woman who is poised to be the New York Metropolitan Opera's next big star. But first, in recent years, many Iowans have been noticing something weird happening to their oak trees. The leaves seem to kind of fall apart. The tissue of a leaf might become brown or purple and shrivel up, leaving behind a tattered remnant. It's called oak tatters. And we don't yet have a definitive answer as to why it's happening. And some opposing viewpoints have created controversy. We will get into that a little later on, but we're going to start with trying to understand what is happening to these oak trees. And DNR forester Mark Vitosh is here to give us some background. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, when did we first start seeing oak tatters in Iowa?
Well, historically, if we look at the literature and stuff, it's hard to know. It looks like potentially as early as the 1970s, but most of the literature tends to talk about the 1980s. The thing is, there's really no good written documentation that says this is when it happened. So if we really go back in 1994, 1995, that's really when we started to see this condition where we have recorded information. There's actually the home Hort Pest News of June 1995 actually talked about the tatters condition. And for me, I was actually working at Iowa State University as a urban forestry specialist, and I was covering the whole state. And that spring, I started getting calls from homeowners, extension offices, and places like that, and they felt that something was eating all the leaves of their oak trees. And in most cases, they were talking about white oaks. And after all said and done, I had over 33 counties in eastern Iowa report this new condition where it looked like gypsy moth or some type of caterpillar had been eating all their leaves. So that's kind of when the oak tatters main symptom and heavy reports really start coming in. But I can tell you since 1995, I have seen oak tatters every single year somewhere in Iowa. Mostly in the eastern part of the state. We don't get as many reports in the west, but I physically have been around since then and have seen that condition somewhere in the state of Iowa since 1995.
So I did a little bit of a description of what the leaves look like and the fact that they look tattered. Obviously, that gives us an idea. But go a little more in depth. When you notice there's something wrong with a tree, what are you seeing?
So again, most people that, you know, now that will email me or call me, they'll say it looks like my tree has been eaten by insects, because basically what they see is they see a leaf with just veins and all the basically main leaf tissue of that tree is gone. And sometimes it's kind of uniform, but sometimes it's very jagged looking. So it looks like there's been caterpillars just chewing all over that leaf. And when it was first reported, there's also reports like from Illinois in the 1990s, about 1999, they called it bare bones syndrome. That's when but now they call it tatters. But when they first started reporting it, they called it bare bones. And it's actually been reported in Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa is where most of the literature talks about reporting oak tatters. But again, it looks like an insect has really eaten the majority of that, but the vein is still there.
And we've ruled that out. It's not an insect.
Well, it's kind of interesting. The Ohio State folks, they actually have an insect called the oak shot hole leaf miner. And during its feeding process, it actually pierces the leaf. And as that tissue develops, it causes kind of a Swiss cheese look. But I can tell you in Iowa, I've actually watched this condition since 1995, but I really started taking a really close look in 2002. I actually was set up in the Quad Cities and in the Muscatine area, and actually went out and marked 25 trees in two different locations. And in the Quad City area, from 2002 to 2009, I went out every spring once a week, usually the same day, for 7 to 8 weeks. And I looked at these trees and I watched as things happen. And basically, the leaves would come out of the buds, and when you saw them, they looked fine. I mean, you saw these tiny leaves, probably the size of my thumbnail, coming out looking fine. I come back a week later, and on the edges, I see a very well-defined kind of purplish or whitish, and in the case of bur oak, kind of a brownish. And you could see the line where there was basically damaged tissue and then green tissue. I come back 7 days later and actually have pictures of that tissue literally falling off. Well, there's no insect that does that. Right. So we see that there's a damaged line on that oak leaf. And basically, you know, within a week or two, that tissue starts to fall off. And then voila, you have oak tatters.
So you mentioned that back in 95, the calls you were getting were about white oak.
Right.
But it is not just white oak.
Well, white oak seems to be the one that we get the most calls on, or did originally. But I have actually seen it. I would say the second most common oak that I see it on is bur oak, but I've also seen it on swamp white oak. I've seen it on red oak. I've seen it on black oak. And the last 2 years, I have a client or landowner that I work with, and we've seen it on her chinkapin oak. So we've seen it on most of the native oaks. Now, the thing to kind of throw another bolt into the system here is we've also seen it on hackberry, a very, very similar symptom. We don't see the purple edges like we do on the white oaks. It's more of a brown. But when I was taking pictures of those white oaks between 2002 and 2009, I saw the same thing on hackberry, so I'd start taking pictures of those. And I'd come, and there'd be this kind of translucent brown look to the leaf around the edges of the hackberry, come back a week later, and I have pictures of that tissue falling off just like that. And one of the early concerns was maybe it was frost damage or something like that. And we see frost damage. You know, we live in Iowa, we see that. It causes a very brown texture to it, and that tissue doesn't fall off. It just dies. And the tatter situation, that tissue is also dying, but it's basically senescing between those two layers, and it's causing that tissue to fall off. The other thing that we've seen is we have a disease called anthracnose, and it causes a similar symptom, but tatters tends to impact between the veins, and anthracnose will actually run down the vein and cause more of a browning, but it too doesn't tend to cause any tissue to fall off. So we're not seeing disease or insects or weather that seem to be causing this. Whatever's happening, that tissue is damaged, and then usually within a week or two, that tissue falls off, giving you the tatter symptom.
Is there another common denominator among the trees that are affected? Does it tend to affect trees of a certain age?
Well, we actually, last year I had a brand new tree planting that went out that had white oak in it, and it had tatters. I get out in the woods where there's white oaks that are 150 to 200 years old, they get tatters. So it can impact any tree of any age and any size.
So when you see oak tatters on your tree, what does that mean for that tree?
Well, what we're seeing is, and this is one of the concerns, is some of these trees look so defoliated. And when we look at them, like right now, we're in early June, and some of those trees that are heavy, I looked at some trees in Eldora last week, and those trees were so thin that that's not what they look like this time of year. And in the case of these trees, the defoliation damage look was so bad that the trees were breaking their secondary buds, which usually don't break until probably July or maybe even early August. But because that tree can't produce photosynthate, it has to have new leaf tissue. So it was breaking those buds and producing new leaves. The funny thing is, those new leaves do not show the tatter symptoms. Same thing on hackberry. Those leaves fall off, or those leaves are heavily damaged, sometimes so bad that that tree has to open those secondary buds, which it doesn't normally. So that's taking energy from that tree. If that happens every year, you get concerned that at some point that tree could be more susceptible to other insects or to disease issues and stuff. So it could be a stress on that tree. We don't have specific research that says yes, but we know when we talk about gypsy moth damage and defoliation on trees, we always talk about that if it happens year after year, at some point that can stress that tree enough to cause other problems. And when I did those observational studies in the Quad City and Muscatine area, I watched trees, and I'd come late summer, and I would rate those trees from 0 to 5 if they had tatters or not. And I had some trees in the Quad City sample that from 2002 to 2009, they had some level of tatters every single year. In that same group of 25, there were some trees that would have it this year but not the next year, then skip 2 years but then have it 2 years. So just because it gets tattered doesn't mean it's going to be tattered every year. But in some cases, like case of this chinkapin oak, one of my landowners, she's had it the last 2 years. That tree has been tattered.
And you can see a grove of oak trees, and some of those trees may have tatters and others not.
Correct. So that's the big mystery. And you know, within that wooded area, some can be heavily damaged and some may not be. And so we just don't know. The one thing I can tell you is whatever happens is it happens when those leaves are just unfolding. And so even within the tree, like on these big white oaks, sometimes the other thing is it's very uniform through the tree. The whole tree tends to show it. Once in a while on the white oaks, though, sometimes the lower leaves will show it more and not much on the top. But those lower leaves come out later and they're smaller. But it appears that if those leaves get a couple inches, whatever it is, doesn't impact them. But when they're small, so different trees can be phenology, their stage of growth can be different. So whatever it is could be impacting them, and the ones that are at that unfolding stage seem to be more susceptible to whatever it is.
All right. Well, obviously this is something we're going to see more of and learn more about. Mark Vitosh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
DNR forester Mark Vitosh. We're talking about oak tatters. You can also see hackberry tatters. And we're going to talk in a moment about where we think oak tatters might be coming from. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll meet soprano Jessica Faiselt of Kelowna, Iowa. She just may be the next big thing on the New York City opera scene. Right now, we're talking about oak tatters. It's a condition that's been around since the 1980s, but documented since 1995. We don't have a definitive answer about what is causing oak tatters, but the theory that comes up again and again is herbicide exposure. Now, of course, that's a possibility that attracts attracts quite a bit of attention in this agriculture state. We're going to take a look at the possible causes and the controversy. And with me now is ISU Extension Forestry Specialist Jesse Randall. Hello, Jesse.
Hi, Charity.
And Bob Hartzler, Professor of Agronomy at Iowa State and ISU Extension Weed Specialist. Hello, Bob.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here today. And Jesse, I want to start with you. You have some very strong opinions about where oak tatters is coming from. What do you think is causing this condition?
Well, you know, back when Mark approached me when we got here about the condition, I didn't really know anything about it. And with some of the startup dollars I had, I started looking into it. And we've done a series of studies with a variety of different species, and we kind of looked at what the folks in Illinois and Nebraska had already looked at, and we really narrowed down on acetichlor. And it's a pre-emergent herbicide, and really what I wanted to do is see if we could replicate that or the level of damage that we're seeing out in the natural environment in a controlled environment. And the first study we did, we used, you know, different rates of acetichlor, and we threw in, you know, a trial of 2,4-D, and we had well-watered controls, and we started seeing the same level of damage. And it seemed to be linear in regards to the concentration that we applied. And we did that at bud break, and we did that when they were just expanding their leaves. And I would second what Mark talked about in terms of every tree is different, and the level of damage seems to scale nicely when those leaves are about a half inch to an inch in length. They're highly susceptible. And that was really our first indication of how this damage above ground is shown. Part of what my lab does is look below ground. I'm interested, because this is a pre-emergent herbicide, I was interested what happens to the root systems. And we've done a series of studies looking at the loss or the inhibition of root growth on trees. And what we find over the course of a growing season, if you're starting from an acorn, you lose about 95% of your roots, and almost all of the fine roots are gone. When you jump to a two-year-old seedling, you're going to lose with one application or treatment level, you're going to lose 25 to 30% of the fine roots. And we were able to break those apart into 10 different classes. And we see that loss across all size classes of roots. And what worries me more than the above-ground symptoms is the below-ground loss of roots. You know, trees, like Mark talked about, can reflush, and that's an energy that's an energy hog to a tree. But when you start to lose roots and you see that loss sustained throughout the summer, that becomes a real problem. And you have that loss year after year after year. And the scary part is the oak trees show the above ground symptoms. All of the trees we tested, walnut, black cherry, sugar maple, hackberry, red oak, bur oak, white oak, they all show similar losses of roots. And that, to me, is incredibly frightening. With just one application, you can lose a substantial amount of roots. And that, again, what Mark talked about, the herbicide might not directly be killing them, but it weakens the trees year after year to the point where two-line chestnut borer, or it becomes more susceptible to oak wilt. That's my worry with this chemical, or whatever the condition is on this one.
Well, and how long has acetichlor been being used in fields in Iowa?
You know, I pulled up a recent printout, and as far as I can tell, it looks about 94, 95, acetichlor came on the market and really ramped up in use as aliclor and metolachlor begin to diminish. You know, and the folks in Nebraska and the folks in Illinois that did the studies also showed aliclor and metolachlor could cause tattering, but their use has really dropped off as acetichlor and its mixes have greatly increased, you know, and it's about a pound per acre on, you know, on our fields in Iowa. And really Bob would probably have a better handle on the chemical and the lifespan and kind of the usage.
Well, and Bob, you and Jesse actually worked together on this laboratory test of acetachlor with trying to reproduce oak tatters in the lab, right?
Right. So I helped Jesse, and I sprayed some oaks with concentrations of acetachlor. They're seen in rain, and we're able to induce the symptoms. And so that's more of a concern. I think that one of my issues with the Illinois study is they use rates that are so high that it's unlikely that trees out in the wild would be exposed to those doses. But what I work with Jesse were doses comparable to what has been detected in rain.
All right. But you don't feel that study that you did in the lab is definitive, that doesn't necessarily show us that this is what's happening in our environment. Why not?
Yes, it's pretty complicated. And sometimes I think my defense isn't real strong, but herbicides, there's different classes of herbicides. And so acetachlor is part of what we call group 15 herbicide. And so there's several products that affect plants the same way. And usually these herbicides induce similar type symptoms. And so Jesse mentioned allochlor and metolachlor. And these products have been used widely since the 1960s. Just as many corn acres were being treated with those products back in the 60s and 70s than acetachlor is being used now. And those products, especially allochlor and propachlor, which was one of the first, those products had a much higher vapor pressure than acetachlor. So it makes sense that there would have been much higher concentrations of these herbicides in the 70s and 80s in the atmosphere than what we see with acetachlor. So it doesn't make sense to me that why we didn't see oak tatters more when the oaks would have been exposed to more herbicides back in the 70s and 80s. Because all these herbicides within a group cause typical injury symptoms. And another thing that, you know, causes me to question this, I'm not willing to rule it out, but herbicides generally cause similar type symptomology on a wide range of plants. And so these herbicides have been used a long time, and we don't see tatter type symptoms on any other plants that are exposed to them. And so it has me mystified, you know, how to actually prove it. Would take some really detailed studies where we, you know, expose plants. We'd have to filter the atmosphere to get the acetachlor that's in the atmosphere out and then introduce it at known concentrations. And those would be very costly experiments. And unfortunately, trying to find money to do that is difficult.
So let me ask you, I want to go back to what you were saying about how you set this up in the lab. You were using concentrations of acetachlor that are found in rain. Explain that to me, because when we think about herbicide damage, I think a lot of people think about herbicide drift when it's applied in a field, that herbicide drifting into an area that it's not intended for. But when you talk about herbicide in rain, what exactly are you talking about?
Yeah, so it's pretty evident to me that we're not looking at typical pesticide drift with the oak tatters, because trees are affected that are long distances from crop fields. So if it is indeed acetachlor, it has to be coming from the atmosphere. And we know that these products get up in the air. So in one of the studies Mark talked about, you know, they actually documented how much acetachlor was in the air and also in rainfall. And so that's what Jesse and I did, use concentrations that have been found in areas where oak tatters showed. And so we just mixed the product in at that concentration and used a typical small plot sprayer that we sprayed on small oaks that Jesse was growing in the greenhouse. And that is, you know, that is not typical of the exposure that would occur in the field. If it's, you know, rainfall, there'd be a much greater quantity of water hitting those trees in 90% of the, in the cases. We know that when you do simulated drift, that plants can respond differently than they would to true drift. And so I assume the same thing when you're looking at atmospheric concentration. What really concerns, but these products are known to have relatively little activity on established plants. As Jesse mentioned, they're used pre-emergence, so they control seeds as they start to germinate. There are other herbicides that are active at much lower concentrations than these products that are in the atmosphere, and we don't see symptoms from those. And so I'm confused, but it just doesn't make sense. That's not good for a scientist to say, but there's lots of questions left.
Well, and it sounds like you're saying that you don't think these questions are going to be answered because it's going to be too expensive to do the research?
Well, you know, I've talked with Jeff Isles in horticulture, and he feels that something needs to be done. And I went to Eldora with Mark and Jeff last week, and it is a serious issue. We need to figure out what's going on, because if we just go on like we are, nothing's going to happen. And so hopefully we're going to seek some funding and perhaps we can find the dollars to actually do the types of studies that mimic the exposure in the wild.
And Jesse, I sense frustration. Tell me about your fears at this point. If we've been seeing this. This has been documented since 1995. You're talking about what could be going on underneath the soil. Mm-hmm. What are your fears?
Well, you know, part of my fear is, you know, living out in the country as I do, I've been able to watch my bur oaks. They're planted side by side. And one is what I call my northern strain. It's delayed bud break by about 3 weeks. It's never been tattered. My southern strain, it breaks 3 weeks earlier than than my other one. And every other year when my neighbor plants his corn and has it sprayed by the co-op, it's completely defoliated by tatters. My fear, and this is coming more from a parent side of things, with three little kids, and this is in the atmosphere. Look at the Iowa Hygienic Lab for the amounts that are in the atmosphere. We raise our own gardens. We, you know, raise our own meat. And this is coming down on my kids. This is coming down on my garden. We don't spray our garden with chemicals. That's just not how we live. And it's coming down whether I want it to or not. And I have no say in that. So aside from the trees, my fear is also, what is this doing to us? What's it doing to our pets? What's it doing to our livestock? What is it doing to our food source? Because it's everywhere. You know, my fear is, as Bob alluded to, if we don't find the funding to do it, nobody's going to do it. We know there's an issue out there, and it's probably bigger than I think any of us realize right now. You know, nobody likes to look below ground at roots because it takes a lot of money. And there's a lot of back pressure on this. It is a widely used chemical. It does exactly what it was designed to do. I don't think anybody knew that this was possible or going to happen. I sit on the other side of the camp where I'm pretty sure it is acetichlor. I don't know if it's a combination of the chemical volatilizing and the trees breaking bud at just the wrong time. Are we shifting our bud break sooner? And it just so happens that the white oaks and more species have the corresponding leaf phenology that they're sensitive. So it could be a whole host of different issues that we're faced with. A changing climate, a changing product. And given the pessimist side of me, given that it is so widely used, given that it is so economically important to certain companies, given that we have a fox guarding the hen house at EPA, I honestly, even if we had the best research in the world, I don't think things are going to change until there is a fundamental shift in the public's desire And part of that is we put out a survey mechanism for landowners and homeowners. They can go in, they can map the damage, they can let us know how extensive it is, and that's on the Forestry Extension website. We need to know where it is, how much of it is happening, and I think, you know, this show and the conversations that we're going to have are going to draw more and more attention to the problems. And I think when people start looking at their trees in the early spring and that first flush of leaves that melt off and turn purple, I think their eyes will be, you know, enlarged, let's say.
And I've tweeted out a link to your online survey for wonderful. Tracking oak tatters damage on oaks. And you've been getting a lot of calls, a lot of reports of this mm-hmm. kind of damage. And we only have about a minute left, but Bob, I want to ask you, where do you think we need to go from here in Iowa? Yeah, this kind of research, it's expensive, and maybe there hasn't been a lot of pressure to do it because oak trees are not an economic driver in the state. What happens next? How can we move forward?
Yeah, there has to be enough push that people realize that this is a serious issue. And up until now, I think a lot of people think it's just been a tree here or there, and it grows out of it rapidly. And that's definitely not the case. There's something going on, and it's not going to be easy to figure out exactly what it is, but it is very important that we know what is affecting these trees.
Well, Bob Hartzler, thank you so much for talking with me today.
It was a pleasure being here.
Bob Hartzler, professor of agronomy at Iowa State University and ISU Extension weed specialist. And Jesse Randall, I know you're hoping a lot of people will give you some feedback about what they're seeing on their oak trees and other trees, right?
I'd love it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for being here today.
Bye-bye.
ISU Extension forestry specialist Jesse Randall. Again, if you search for an online survey for tracking oak tatters damage on oaks, you can find Jesse Randall's survey. It's also on the Iowa State University Extension Forestry website, and I've tweeted out a link to that as well. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to meet soprano Jessica Faisal from Kelowna, Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.